Chapter 38. The following morning, her entire body hurt. She stumbled out of the tent and tried to run through the basic exercises she'd been taught. Her body felt as if she had been brutally beaten by a small army of thugs. She didn't want to undress and look at herself for fear of seeing her entire body turned black and blue. Sergeant Harkin gave her a sharp look as he prepared the cook pot.
"I take it you never marched like that before."
Emily nodded, then tried to do a push-up. Her arms failed her after two single movements, and she collapsed on the grass. She needed a hot bath and a massage, but she wasn't going to get either. No wonder few of the infantrymen in pictures had looked happy. And they were experienced soldiers. She had never walked so hard or carried so much in her entire life.
"Keep moving," Harkin suggested, as Jade and Bran stumbled out of the tent.
Emily was relieved to see that both of them looked as though they were aching, too.
"And drink some of the potion. You'll find that it helps with the pain."
He grinned nastily.
"In fact, why don't the three of you run over to the tunnel and back? It will get your blood flowing again."
Emily obeyed and discovered, rather to her surprise, that he was right. If something had been chasing her, she wasn't sure she could have escaped, but her attempt at running did make her feel better. Once drunk, the potion sent a warm glow throughout her entire body and eased away some of the pain. It might be hours before she could walk properly, but at least she could move. Breakfast consisted of more of the deer, some bread from their rucksacks, and a stew made from various plants the sergeants had found. Emily watched as they cooked it, reminding the students, again, that they had to be very careful when picking certain plants because it could be difficult to tell which ones were safe to eat. There were spells for checking, but apparently they weren't always completely reliable. Mushrooms, it seemed, could fool the spells and poison anyone stupid enough to eat the wrong one. They'd been taught how to tell if something was safe to eat, but only in theory. Emily had never had to try in real life.
"The Dark City was once the home of the fairy," Sergeant Harkin said as he spooned out the stew to his students.
He nodded toward the giant statue, which had sharply pointed ears and a face too narrow to be human.
"From here, they ruled most of the world, until a necromantic storm drove the great lords of the fair folk away from humanity. Their city was left behind to rot into nothingness."
His eyes narrowed.
"We bring you here to show you what you may be fighting, and to introduce you to some of the stranger natural magic out there. Remember everything we taught you about avoiding magical traps, because there are dangers in what remains of the city, and some of them can be fatal."
"Most of them can be fatal," Miles added.
"Or they'll make you wish you were dead."
Emily nodded. She'd read books on just what the fair folk had done to humans who had fallen into their clutches, and most of them had made the necromancers look sane and reasonable. There had been a young boy who'd been given a tongue that always rhymed, forcing him to become a poet. A young girl who had been frozen at 9 years old, no matter how old she became. A married couple who had literally been bound together. And unlike other curses, fairy gifts were impossible to remove. It hadn't been clear if the fairy thought they were actually giving gifts, or if they were just tormenting people, but the end result was always the same. Those who were given gifts by the fairy came to regret it. The stew tasted surprisingly good in the crisp morning air. They checked the pond again before taking water from it to wash their plates, piling them up in the tent along with most of the supplies. Sergeant Miles cast a simple ward to keep away bandits, thieves, and wild animals, ensuring that they didn't have to carry the rucksacks up to the Dark City. Emily was relieved as they started on the trail up to the giant statue. The path was hard enough without carrying a massive rucksack with them. Up close, the statue was inhumanly perfect as well as alien, leaving her to wonder if there had been a giant fairy who had been petrified by some long-forgotten magic. Strange wisps of wild magic danced around the statue's feet, suggesting that it might be dangerous to go too close. Emily was grateful when Sergeant Miles led them around the statue and into the city proper. She felt her eyes go wide as she stared, unable to fully comprehend the alien majesty of the city. It was a maze of giant ziggurats, pyramids, and statues of strange creatures that couldn't possibly exist in real life. A chill ran down the back of her neck as she realized that parts of the city seemed to change every time she looked away, pathways twisting in and out of existence, probably leading to places beyond her comprehension. The sense of being inside something completely alien grew stronger as she realized what was missing. There was no sound at all within the city, not even the chirping of flying birds. She couldn't see any living thing at all, apart from the team. One of the buildings, a giant pyramid, was covered in strange pictures, none of them very pleasant. One showed an elf tormenting a group of humans, the second showed a strange hybrid between human and animal, and the third showed an elf being strangled to death by a hangman's cord. She looked away for a heartbeat, then looked back. She realized in horror that the elf in the third picture had moved slightly. Could that picture be real, or was it just a twisted form of artwork? There was no way for her to know. A second building seemed to be built from mirrors. Emily looked into it and saw her reflection looking back at her, just before her reflection twisted and started to change. She saw herself wearing a ballroom gown and smirking, rather like a lassa, before she'd been shocked into changing her ways, before the gown became rags and she found herself on her knees. The image blinked out of existence a moment later, only to be replaced by a black-suited Emily carrying a gun in one hand and a small computer in the other. And then there was a version of her with vampire fangs, wearing a gothic outfit that she wouldn't have touched in a million years. Emily stumbled back in shock.
"We don't know what that building does," Miles offered.
The sergeant didn't seem surprised by her reaction.
"One of the professors from Whitehall believes the fairy could see into alternate worlds and show us what we might have been if we'd grown up in a different world. Another believes that it merely shows us nightmares from our own minds. There's no way to tell the difference."
"Yeah," Emily said, glancing back at the mirror. She saw a tall sorceress carrying a wand, her face twisted in a permanent sneer. It took her a moment to realize that it was her, just with different hair and wearing a dress that made the gothic outfit look reasonable. Maybe if she'd allowed Alassa to corrupt her instead of trying to change the princess. Or was it her future, if she kept playing pranks and abusing her powers? Can just anyone use it?
"Anyone who comes here can use it," Miles said, "but very few people come to the city."
Emily could see why, as they walked through the remainder of the complex. It was eerie, so eerie that she would have run away long ago if she'd been alone. It was deserted, yet she sensed she was being watched at all times. Some of the doorways gaped invitingly, suggesting that she could follow the fairy to wherever they'd gone after being defeated by humanity. And yet she had the feeling that following them would be the worst thing she could do. The next part of the city was a strange pool of shimmering liquid. It felt dangerous, even though she couldn't put a finger on why. It was a relief when Harkin ordered them to stay away from it. Perhaps there was something lurking in the liquid, or perhaps it was something far more dangerous than any human could comprehend. She was reluctant to turn her back on it, and as they all headed back towards the open square in the center of the city, she saw that the others had the same reaction. The city was a place of nightmares. She could have asked if the sergeants knew what the pool was, but she didn't want to know.
"The fairy used to bring humans here for their amusement," Harkin said.
Somehow even his voice sounded tinny and weak in the dark city.
"They would play with their captives, controlling their every movement, or throw them to the monsters they developed in their secret laboratories. Each death made the fairy laugh. They sucked up souls and stored them for later use. And when the fairy were finally defeated, the souls were completely destroyed, just out of spite. They were not allowed to pass on to the next world."
Emily shivered. She'd never been very religious, but even she had problems accepting the thought that something could destroy a soul. Or could it? Perhaps the fairy had been wrong, and they'd held nothing more than an impression of each person they'd killed, their souls going onwards to the next world. But if ghosts existed in this world, did that mean there was no afterlife? The thought bothered her as they explored the remainder of the city. No human was comfortable with the thought of their existence being completely terminated. Even the idiots who blew themselves up for political reasons believed in an afterlife where they would be rewarded by God for their suicides. But if their lives, and all that they were, just stopped when they died, the thought was awful. What if there was no afterlife? Maybe it was the fear of discovering that death was truly the end that drove necromancers to suck out life and mana from their victims. They knew that they would vanish when they died. And if there was no afterlife, no judgment, Why not indulge yourself as much as possible? Emily had been horrified when Alassa had frozen the maid, believing it to be an abuse of power, as well as an unprovoked attack on an innocent. Alassa hadn't really understood Emily's point, because her culture said that the lower classes were there for the use of the upper classes. But if there was no final judgment, then who was to say which system of morality was right? Perhaps there was no such thing as morality in the first place. All they had was the delusion that they had a working system. She was still mulling over this question when they started to clamber down out of the dark city and back towards where they had left their tents. As before, the sergeants gave the forest a wide berth, even though they had told their students that it was safe. Emily allowed herself to wonder if they had their own reasons for avoiding it, or if they were just trying to keep the students aware of possible dangers. It was a more productive thing to wonder about than the existence, or non-existence, of souls.
"There are creepier places to visit," Miles said, in answer to a question from Jade. "You may be lucky enough to visit Ashfall one day. A necromancer died there 50 years ago, and the land is still screaming." "No one wants to go there," Harkin added dryly. "What about the Desert of Death?"
Emily looked at him. "The Desert of Death?"
"Rumor has it that an immensely powerful witch was beaten to death there for daring to fall in love with the wrong man," Harkin informed her. "Which does, of course, raise the question of how she was killed in the first place, if she was so powerful."
Harkin snorted.
"When she died, she cursed the entire land to wither and die. The land became barren within a year, and the entire population had to flee. I think many of them became slaves in the nearby countryside because there was nowhere else to go." "That's one story," Miles said with a shrug. "Another one is that the local lord was experimenting with necromancy, and it all went horribly wrong, or more horribly wrong than normal, seeing that no experiments with limited necromancy ever end well. Somehow, and no one knows how, he drew the life out of 100 square miles around his castle, wiping out his subjects, their livestock, and every plant in the area. The entire country became a desert afterwards."
Emily shivered, wondering which of the two stories was actually true. This world didn't have television and reporters to bring people the news directly into their homes. It didn't even have newspapers, just broadsheet readers and heralds. A rumor could grow completely out of proportion by the time it crossed from one end of the Allied lands to the other, creating a myth that bore no resemblance to reality. No wonder that the Allied lands didn't seem to take necromancy and the necromancers quite seriously. There was always an air of detachment in the news she heard, rather than the immediacy she remembered from back home. Jade frowned thoughtfully.
"No one has ever tried to replant the area?" "They've tried," Miles said. "It's never worked. I think that some of the nearby countries believe the desert is actually expanding very slowly. Given time, it may swallow up the entire continent."
"I hope that's not true," Emily said, shaking her head in disbelief. Back home, they'd managed to stop deserts from advancing, but here there was magic involved. Wild magic tainted with necromancy, if the second story was the true one. What are they going to do if the desert reaches their kingdoms?
"Pray," Harkin said.
He chuckled darkly.
"What else can they do?" "Sergeant," a voice shouted.
Bran and Cat had gone ahead of the rest of the team.
"The tent!"
Harkin sprang forward, running ahead of Emily and Jade. They followed him, running around the edge of the forest, only to see a pile of ashes where their tent and supplies had been. Emily stared in numb horror as the sergeant slowed to a halt, looking down at the ashes. Their rucksacks, their food, their blankets, they had all been destroyed, and there was a strange, almost oily scent in the air.
"Hellfire," Sergeant Harkin muttered.
He glanced from side to side, sniffing the air.
"Draw your swords, all of you, and ready your defensive spells."
Emily obeyed automatically. The short sword she'd been given hadn't been charmed to be unstoppable. Apparently, there was no such thing as an unstoppable weapon. But she knew how to use it, she reminded herself. She was tempted to also draw her dagger as the team looked around, searching for possible threats. The strange stink in the air was growing stronger.
"We're sitting targets here," Harkin said after a moment.
When I give the word, move back towards the tunnel at speed, but keep your swords at the ready. If something appears that isn't one of us, hit first and ask questions later. And keep your voices down.
Emily glanced at Jade, but he looked as puzzled as she was. If their tents had been burned, someone or something was hunting them, probably something intelligent. Was this a test of some kind? Emily asked herself silently, as she braced herself to move. Or was it real? She couldn't believe that the sergeants would throw away everything in the rucksacks, including the potions, just for a test. But they'd surprised her before.
That stink is almost certainly goblins,
Miles muttered. He was making passes through the air, casting spying spells in the hopes of catching sight of their enemy.
And probably backed up by orcs. I think there's definitely some orc in the air. Or maybe they're just trying to confuse us, Harkin muttered back.
He raised his voice.
Jade, Emily, Cat, follow Miles back to the tunnel. The rest of you stay here at the ready.
Emily felt her heart pounding in her chest as she started to move, eyes darting around desperately for unseen threats. Goblins, according to the books she'd read, could be clever and dangerous. Orcs were rarely clever, but those that were tended to be smarter than the average human. And both semi-human races infested lands held by the necromancers. She kept looking around, seeing nothing, until they reached the tunnel. Miles jumped back as blades lashed out at him, trying to drive them back from the tunnel mouth.
Damn it, Jade said.
He raised his sword as blades kept slashing out of the tunnel's mouth.
We're being hunted!
Emily looked back at the forest and saw a small wave of inhuman figures appearing out of the darkness.
Use your magic, Harkin ordered sharply.
Unlike the red shirts, he didn't sound as though he were on the verge of panic.
Take down as many of them as you can, now! Use Berserker, Jade said as the goblins advanced.
The largest barely came up to Emily's abdomen, but there was nothing weak about them. They were carrying swords that were bigger than they were.
You cannot fight them without it.
Emily took a deep breath, concentrated, and triggered the spell.